This podcast is brought to you by the new Nikon Coolpix P1 and P2 digital cameras, the world's first compact cameras with built-in Wi-Fi. Now you can take great pictures and easily transfer them directly to your computer or printer wirelessly. Learn more at NikonDigital.com.
Go ahead and look on your hard drive right now. I'll wait. Okay, chances are you've got a handful of movies sitting there. I don't know how you got them. I don't want to know how you got them. But if you look at how they were encoded, chances are they were used by DivX. DivX is something that's you might see, you might not see, but it doesn't matter because it's one of the best video compression codecs out there. One of the best. I'm not going to say it's the best. Now, the PR people, they'll probably say it's the best, but you know, I'll leave it up to you to decide whether it's the best or not. So DivX is here at CES. Imagine that, Consumer Electronics Showcase, because they power a lot of products that are out there, or at least allow a lot of the products, like anything that's related to video, because that's pretty much DivX's specialty and has been for quite some time, it's a marriage made in heaven. Wouldn't you say?
I absolutely would.
So what kind of products do you guys enable?
Well, you know, DivX, as you mentioned, is really a digital media format. And what we do is work with a variety of different kinds of devices and software products to let people create, play, and share the digital video. So that means, you know, we have our own software that people encode into DivX and play back in DivX. We also work with a number of different software providers, people like Movie, as you mentioned earlier, Pinnacle, InterVideo, Roxio. So you can use all these video editing suites that you may have in your PC and create DivX videos with those. And then, you know, the really kind of interesting thing that we're talking about here at CES, given that it is a consumer electronics show, are the consumer electronics devices. So in the past few years, DivX has made a lot of inroads in the CE industry, and we're now partnered with every major DVD player manufacturer. So at the end of 2005, there were over 50 million DivX-certified devices shipping worldwide. So that's, you know, every major DVD player from, you know, Pioneer to Samsung to Philips now has several models that are DivX-certified. What we're announcing at the show is actually a lot of those companies are moving to DivX-certifying their entire product line. So Pioneer has announced that. Toshiba has announced that. So in 2006, you know, in the U.S., every single Pioneer DVD player will have the DivX logo on it, which will mean you can, you know, play any DivX video that's ever been created on it. Another thing that we've recently announced is a new kind of level of certification called DivX Ultra Certification. So what that means is DVD players will now be able to play back new DivX videos created with advanced features like menus or chapters or subtitles. So the kind of DVD-like experience that you expect from a physical disc, you can now get with DivX. So you can create that on your PC, create your own menu, create your own kind of audio track, director's commentary for your video, and then you can be able to play that back on a DivX Ultra-certified DVD player. Philips is actually announcing the first DivX Ultra-certified DVD player here at the show. They're showing it off in their booth.
How did DivX get its start?
It's an interesting story, actually. DivX was created by a guy named Jerome Rota, who is nicknamed Zhej, and he was a French compositing infographist. He made kind of cool multimedia commercials, actually. And in 1999 in Montpellier, France, he started playing around with some existing MPEG-4 technology, trying to create a video resume that he could send around to prospective consumers, prospective employers. And there were some limitations on the existing technology that he didn't like, that didn't let him kind of really do what he wanted with it. So he spent a few hours, literally a few hours, kind of tinkering around with some things that were already out there, adding a layer of MP3 audio and creating this codec that just kind of fit his own personal needs. And he liked it a lot, and he called it DivX, and he kind of put it up on his own personal website. And, you know, through IRC channels and through the kind of the grassroots power of the internet, people started discovering, and they realized that, you know, he had kind of hit a sweet spot for really high-quality video at really small compression that was kind of perfect for internet delivery of video. And it really, you know, kind of grew from there. It was a true internet phenomenon. There was no company then. There was no one trying to sell it. It was just people sharing the technology and, you know, using it to create videos and share them on the internet. And then about a year after that, a guy named Jordan Greenhall, who was an executive at MP3.com, kind of tracked down Zhej. They realized they kind of had a shared vision. They decided to start a company, and it just has flourished from there.
He apparently didn't realize that Circuit City had tried and failed miserably to market the play once or play for 24-hour DVD, and then it would just, like, what, explode into flames. It was also called DivX. Why the name?
Well, he actually did realize that, and that is exactly why he named it DivX. DivX, the DivX that you speak of at that time by Circuit City, was kind of in its last throes, and it was, for many of the features that you just described, it was fairly widely reviled among a certain segment of the tech community that Zhej was a member of. So he called his DivX DivX with a winky face emoticon, so it was actually a bit of a winking jab at the old Circuit City. Of course, he named it that, never thinking he would start a company, never thinking there would be products named that. But by the time the company was actually started, the name had become so popular with the new DivX that it just kind of stuck and has been called that ever since. But, you know, there is no actual relationship between this DivX and the old Circuit City DivX.
It seems that now... pardon me. It seems that nowadays, when I download a show off of BitTorrent, I pay for all the cable subscriptions, and I'm, you know, I'm $100 subscriber for Comcast, so I just couldn't catch the show, and somehow Media Center or whatever had to record something else. When I download a show, it seems like more and more of them seem to be encoded in XVID. How does that play into this whole DivX thing?
You know, XVID is interesting. XVID is really, in many ways, a continuation of an open-source DivX project that was released in 2001 called OpenDivX. There was a period where we did have where DivX was essentially open-source. It was an open-source project. For a variety of reasons, that didn't last very long. We ended up releasing DivX 4, which was closed-source, and it's been closed-source ever since. But when OpenDivX kind of stopped existing in its form, it was taken up by the XVID developers, and they kind of continue the open-source tradition. You know, XVID is a great open-source MPEG-4 codec, and we fully support it. We have a very strong relationship with the XVID guys. You know, files created using XVID are actually playable in DivX certified devices. So, you know, we see XVID as a complement to DivX. You know, we don't really see it as a competitor. You know, there are things you can do in DivX precisely because it is something that we've, you know, worked on with our codec engineers that you can't necessarily do in XVID, you know, some of the advanced features that I talked about, the DVD-like experience. But, you know, there's no question that XVID is a great codec, and, you know, we're glad they're out there. We're glad there is an open-source project like XVID out in the world, and we very much support them.
You recently celebrated an anniversary and did something stupid.
Well, yeah, that's one way to put it. We had a 5-year anniversary, and a few months ago, we actually gave away a completely free version of the DivX Create Bundle for 24 hours to celebrate our anniversary. And it was, you know, people were very, very happy about it. It was enormously successful. And, you know, that was just kind of our way of, you know, of recognizing the fact that the success of the DivX phenomenon, certainly the success of our company, certainly, you know, our jobs here are all based entirely on, you know, this phenomenal global community of people who have discovered DivX, who have been very, very passionate about it, and who really, you know, use it on a daily basis and evangelize it. And we, you know, we wanted to recognize that for at least a while and you know, give something back to those people in a small way. A lot. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but it was huge. It was far and above our normal daily download rate, that's for sure.
So what is the future of DivX? I mean, you've got a lot of these players here, but for people, they don't care if it's encoded in DivX and Windows Media and they don't care. So is this going to just kind of slip into the background even more so?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, you know, the future of DivX for us is really making it possible for people to kind of discover the power of digital expression, to really find out all the great things that digital technology enables and to take advantage of them in a useful way. So, you know, what we want to do is we don't want people to think about what codec they have. We don't want people to have to, you know, have to look for a certain kind of logo on a certain kind of device and have to think about what restrictions may be there and what may not. So, you know, what we're working toward and what we've tried to build these past 3 years is a kind of a real ecosystem where you have real interoperability. And that's something that everyone at the show is talking about, right? They're talking about, you know, a lot of buzzwords like convergence and, you know, the connected home. And everybody has their own version of that. That's you know, very proprietary. And there's all kinds of different content out there and all kinds of different formats that will play on this device or won't play on that device. So you can do this with and you can't do with that. And, you know, we want real interoperability. So while people have been talking about that, we've been working to try and actually make it happen. So, you know, we have these 50 million devices out there. You know, in a few years, DivX is really going to be ubiquitous on the CE side where it's a checklist feature. You don't even think about it. The way where you buy a stereo today, you just assume it plays MP3 because they all do. And we're very close to having that on the DivX side. Every DVD player you buy, you know, very soon we'll have DivX on it. In Western Europe, for example, you know, there are countries where that's already the case. In France, it's something like 80 to 90% of all DVD players sold have DivX on it. And we're moving toward that, you know, in pretty much every region. So when we finally reach that kind of ubiquity, which we're not that far away from, then we really have the tools in place to not have to worry about all the other problems that are there with interoperability. And then it just becomes about the content, right? It becomes about getting people access to DivX files in a way that's easy to find and, you know, easy to use, where they can create them easily. They can, you know, they can find them, whatever kind of content it is that they want, whether it's personal content, whether it's videos people just want to share with each other, or whether it's, you know, premium content from major Hollywood studios that you can rent and buy on your own and then move to all your devices. That's the future we see, where, you know, all this content is available to you, and it's more importantly, it's meaningful and useful to you. You can do what you want with it in the way that you want, and, you know, that's the vision, and that's what we're moving toward.
One of the frustrations I have in dealing with codecs, and specifically in Windows, or the Windows Media Player, is that I open an AVI file, which of course is just a wrapper around the video, and it says it can't play. Is there any possibility, I don't know if this is happening or not, I'd love for it to happen, but any kind of operability with some of the bigger media players, like specifically the Windows Media Player, so that if someone downloads or gets a DivX file, it's not going to come up with an error for it.
Well, DivX, the codec is essentially a plugin. That's what it is. So if you download the codec, you should be able to play it back on Windows Media Player or Real Player or pretty much any other media player out there. It would be nice if every media player that existed came with an automatic codec included in it. But for obvious reasons, people like Microsoft and others, they have their own technology, then that's the technology they want you to watch it in. We can't blame them for that. We don't include the Windows Media codec with the DivX player either. That's perfectly understandable. It's a relatively trivial thing to download the codec, and then you can watch it on any media player that you want. It's really not that difficult to do. It would be nice. That's probably more a question for the makers of those individual media players. So, you ask Microsoft why they don't want to include the DivX codec in it, and I'd be interested in what they say. It's a good point that you raised, though, because it goes back to that interoperability question. Everybody talks about interoperability. Everybody wants interoperability, but everybody also wants their own format to win, and it's going to take a while for all those things to work out. In the end, it's really consumers are going to choose. Whatever is the most used format is going to be the format that people use in the end. And so that's why we're focused on giving consumers the kind of experience we think they want and listening to consumers tell us what they want and trying to make that happen. So that's really what we're trying to do.
So you're saying you're iPod compatible, since, of course, that owns, 99% of the market?
99% of the audio market. That's certainly true. iPods... But
the iPod 5G, the video one.
That's an interesting question. We think the iPod, the video iPod, is a great development for this industry. It's obviously kickstarted a lot of things across the board. It's made consumers realize that they can, they can move video to different kinds of devices in a way they didn't realize before. It's made content providers realize that there's a market, for $1.99 download of television shows, which they didn't realize before. So ultimately, the video iPod, I think, definitely benefits everybody in this industry. That said, the video iPod is kind of a classic case of Apple doing something that kind of already existed, but doing it very, very well, improving the form factor, making a great experience. There have been portable media players that do what the video iPod does out in the market for a long, long time. And most of those are DivX certified, and more importantly for us, the portable market is great. It's important to us. But what we're really focused on is the living room, and that means the television. And that means getting content off the PC onto the television. And what most everyone has in their living room underneath their television, it's not a video iPod, it's a DVD player, right? So, the DVD player market is something that we've focused on for years. And now, getting to the point where every DVD player sold in any store, Circuit City or Best Buy or Target, has a DivX logo on it, to us, that's actually probably a lot more significant than something like, a portable device. Portable devices are important. They're an important piece of the ecosystem. But they're just one way to get video off your PC. And you're taking it off your PC, which is a fairly large screen, onto, a very, very tiny screen, as opposed to taking it off your PC and taking it to your television, which is where, at the end of the day, you really want to watch your video.
Okay, so speaking of the television living room, I got to go back to Microsoft, the Xbox 360. Any kind of compatibility down the pike?
Not that we're aware of. We haven't been, as far as I know, we haven't been approached by the Xbox guys. I think, again, the Xbox 360 is another interesting development that is probably good for everyone in the industry, because it brings convergence a little closer to reality for everyone else. But, again, the use case, you have to think about the use case of getting to the television. There are a lot of Xboxes out there. There'll continue to be a lot of Xboxes out there. But there's a lot more DVD players than Xboxes. And, a lot more people watch video off their DVD player as opposed to their gaming console. But gaming consoles in general, are great platforms for digital video in the future. And, it's certainly an area that we're focused on. And, it goes back to your Windows Media Player question. I think I'd be interested in hearing Microsoft answer the question about why they don't support DivX on the Xbox 360. I know it's a question that's been raised by a lot of people. It's something that's not our decision, obviously. We don't make Xboxes.
So are you taking a stance on this whole HD DVD versus Blu-ray thing?
We're not taking a stance. You know, I think we see high definition a little differently than a lot of other people. You know, the DivX codec has been able to do full, you know, 1080 HD since its inception. And we, because the codec is so efficient, we can do HD on existing DVD players today. You know, there are a number of DVD players out in the market that are DivX certified HD DVD players that can do full high definition on a regular red laser disc. And, you know, these are devices that cost $200 or less than $200, as opposed to Blu-ray and HD DVD players that are going to be in the thousands of dollars. You know, so we see HD as a feature, not a category. You know, whereas people see it as a new category that you know, you want to put out in the market and charge all this money for. You know, you don't need to do that. It's here today. You can do it on your regular DVD player, on a regular red laser disc using our technology. But, you know, whether HD DVD or Blu-ray becomes the future, to us, it's pretty much irrelevant. It's just a bigger storage medium, right? You know, you can fit a lot more DivX movies on a Blu-ray disc or a lot more DivX movies on an HD DVD disc. And the other interesting thing is, you know, all the consumer electronics manufacturers that are going to be making these new generation of players, they're already DivX partners. All those chips already support DivX. And even at the show, Pioneer, I think, just announced the first Blu-ray DVD player that they're going to be putting out. And in that press release, they specifically noted that that supports DivX HD. So, you know, and if you look at the logos of a lot of the, you know, Blu-ray or HD DVD players, they have a DivX logo on them. So we're going to be there right alongside those guys. So we don't see it as an either-or choice in any way. You know, HD technology is here. It's here now. People are creating it. You know, we recently sponsored something called the HD Fest, which was an independent HD film festival that traveled around the world and showed, you know, some really interesting short films that independent filmmakers had made in HD. And they were in DivX HD. They're up on our website now, a lot of them. So you can get those movies today. You can download them today. You can burn them to a regular red laser DVD, and you can watch them on your TV today. So, you know, we see the standards war, like a lot of standards war, as something that, if it goes on too long, which arguably it already has, it hurts consumers in the end. You know, the technology is here today. We want to bring it to market, so that's what we're trying to do.
All right, Tom, we'll be watching your camp for further developments in the coming years.
Great. Thanks very much for stopping by.
This podcast is brought to you by the new Nikon Coolpix P1 and P2 digital cameras, the world's first compact cameras with built-in Wi-Fi. Now you can take great pictures and easily transfer them directly to your computer or printer wirelessly. Learn more at NikonDigital.com.
Live streaming of The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media and Limelight Networks. Download Windows Media Player 10 to listen to The Chris Perillo Show live every Thursday from 6 to 9 p.m. Pacific, GMT-8.